Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Kobe Takwe. The deal of the century, as it's so-called, a deal that is supposedly present a peace plan, or so-called peace plan, between Palestinians and Israel. Well, it has been slammed even before being presented. One headline reading, former European officials, for example, rejected. Another one reading, Palestinians will effectively get nothing. In this edition of the debate, we will look at what this deal of the century, as it's so-called, will entail, and why all signs are that Palestinians will be robbed of what should be their God-given right. Press TV's Mona Kandil, our correspondent in occupied Ramallah, joins us first to give us some idea about the most recent headline. Mona Kandil, at this point, I'm curious as to how people are reacting to what the headline read, saying that the so-called deal of the century will not include Palestinian statehood.
Well, the U.S. administration will be presenting the plan, the so-called deal of the century, in the few next months, and it will focus on Israel's security, not the Palestinians' interest, not the Palestinians' dream of having an independent Palestinian state. Today, Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dr. Riyad al-Maliki, warned in the 5th Russian-Arab Cooperation Forum in Moscow, he warned that the next month will be bringing bad news for the Palestinians, saying that it started with the American administration moving its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Al-Quds, giving more support to the Israelis. However, the exact details of the plan remain confidential. But according to Israeli media, who speaking today, they are saying that the Trump's proposal to bring a resolution to the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis, it will link the economic development for Palestinians with recognition of Israel as a state and acceptance of Palestinians of autonomy in the region, not the sovereignty or a statehood. We have to remember that a few days ago there were statements for U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo saying openly that the American administration would be supporting the Israeli regime to annex the illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank to Israel. So this is a recognition from the American administration that the Israelis have the right to expand their territory, the illegal territory, to the occupied West Bank. And if the Palestinians would be having a state, this would be a state Palestinians would be living in cantons, not a viable and contiguous state, not on the agreement that was reached according to the 1967 borders. This was approved and accepted according to the Oslo Accords. So the coming days would be the American administration in a few months, of course, would be presenting their so-called deal of the century. Palestinians insist that any deal would be lowering their expectations, not giving them the rights. They would be rejecting it. However, the American administration clearly said it would be supporting Israel in any move it will be taking in the future.
Thank you very much for that. Mona Kandil, correspondent there from Occupied Ramallah. Let me introduce our guest, historian, academic, and journalist Jeffrey Alderman joins us from London. And on the phone, we have Richard Becker from the Answer Coalition, who joins us from San Francisco. I'd like to welcome you both. Jeffrey Alderman, I don't know if you caught what our reporter said there, based on what she said and what's obviously common knowledge in terms of how the U.S. is supporting Israel. So a quick question before we even start this program. Is the U.S. qualified to be a negotiator when it supports Israel so deeply?
Well, you know, the word qualified is in this sense a loaded word. The two-state solution is dead. There is no peace process at the moment. There is, I suppose, very much on the back burner, the Saudi Arabian initiative, though I don't think we're going to see that reignited anytime soon. So the only deal in town, from the Americans' point of view, the only deal in town is the one that Donald Trump is offering. I actually agree with some of what your guest in Ramallah said. I think although there have been a lot of leaks, and some of these may of course be incorrect. The bottom line probably is that there will be some economic aid to the Palestinians on the West Bank, and in return, Bibi Netanyahu, who has just today confirmed that he has a majority in the Knesset, so he'll be the next Israeli Prime Minister, he will get the American green light for the virtual annexation of Area C as defined in the Oslo agreements. And if you want to call that the deal of the century, you can, of course. That's up to you.
Well, Richard Brecker, what's very interesting about how our guest, Jeffrey Alderman, spoke is that he mentioned what the U.S. wants, he mentioned what Israel is going to do, but he doesn't mention anything about the Palestinians. And that's exactly why the U.S. as a negotiator doesn't really live up to that word. And, of course, seems like they're just trying to shove down the Palestinian throats what they deem to be the so-called deal of the century.
Well, it's very clear that what the intention of the Israeli government is today, completely control and in fact annex the West Bank. You know, if you really go back all the way back to 1949, Moshe Dayan, when he was a young military officer,
told an American diplomat in Tel Aviv that our borders are ridiculous. Our border must be on the Jordan River. And so we see that that has been now carried out. In 1967, and this was has very well documented by the distinguished Israeli historian Ilan Pappe, in the days immediately following the Six-Day War, when Israel conquered Golan Heights and the West Bank and Gaza and Sinai, that the discussion was how to annex the land without annexing the people who lived on the land. In other words, not to give them any rights, and in fact find ways to force them out. That's what the intention has been. And then you come up to the present election, where the Trump administration weighed in on the side of Netanyahu, but even the opposition bloc, the blue and white bloc, its leading civilian, historically civilian leader, Yair Lapid, said, when asked about his position on the Palestinians, was that, number one, Israel would be allowed under any agreement to continue to send its troops into the Palestinian area. That Jerusalem would remain the undivided, quote-unquote, eternal capital of Israel. That the West Bank would be divided up, and that the entire Jordan Valley would remain with Israel, as well as the settlement blocks. And number four, that the Palestinian right of return did not exist. The Palestinians had no right of return. So you can see that the dominant forces, both on the right, the extreme right, which I think represented by the Likud-led bloc, and the slightly less extreme right by the blue and white bloc, and they called it center-left, but that's a joke, those dominant forces all call for the annexation of the West Bank, or very large parts of the West Bank, and the denial of any sovereignty, any real sovereignty or real rights for the Palestinian people.
Yeah, we could get into details, but I still need to make sure that we understand what is going to maybe be happening, Jeffrey Alderman. And I'm sorry to press on this issue, but I'm trying to figure out who's negotiating what. We have a table. You have Israel and the U.S. on one side, okay? Now, I'm assuming on the other side you're going to have, for example, the Palestinian Authority's Mahmoud Abbas. He has said, quote, the first challenge ahead of the new government is the deal, or the so-called deal of the century, adding that any attempts to talk with the Trump administration have been useless. We rejected this deal from the beginning because it did not include Jerusalem, and we do not want a state without Jerusalem or without Gaza. So if you don't have the PA at the other side of the table, then who's negotiating? Is it Israel and the U.S. negotiating amongst themselves how this so-called deal of the century is going to pan out?
You haven't mentioned Hamas. If there is going to be a proper, serious negotiation, Hamas surely should have a seat at the table as well. And it seems to me that Mahmoud Abbas, in the choice of his cabinet, which I think was announced yesterday or today, has made sure that the Palestinian Authority's cabinet is comprised largely, if not exclusively, of cronies of Mahmoud Abbas. Hamas is also a party to these negotiations, and I'm surprised you haven't mentioned them. On the larger question, this isn't going to be a real negotiation. Let's be very frank about this. It's going to be the Pax Americana, or the Pax Trumpcana. It's going to be Donald Trump's imposition of a solution on the Palestinians, on the Israelis, on Hamas, if you like, with very few questions asked. That's what's going to happen.
Very well. Well, Hamas and the PA, they have their own problems, so that was the reason why this was not mentioned. But I'm glad that you mentioned it, and I'm glad that we clarified how this is not going to be a somewhat negotiated solution based on the way we just discussed it. So let's move on to one thing.
That's
Jeffrey
right,
Alderman mentioned, Richard Becker, and that is the economic factor in this whole thing, in the so-called deal of the century. Because looking at what the Washington Post has said, and just weeks ago, the New York Times, they are looking at a plan that not only does away with statehood, as it's mentioned here, but this is the second time that a major headline is running that the plan is turning on economic opportunities for Palestinians and enshrining of Israeli control of the territory, in which Kushner and the U.S. officials are linking peace and economic development to Arab recognition. Basically, they're looking at about $40 or $50 billion worth of economic incentives that not all is going to come from the U.S. Actually, they want to engage even Jordan and some Persian Gulf Arab countries to contribute to that. Sounds like they're throwing money at the Palestinians to buy them. At least that's one way of looking at it. Do you think Palestinians are going to bite, Richard Becker?
Well, certainly there are elements among the Palestinians, the very wealthy, who might go for that. But that's not going to provide any benefits at all, I don't believe, for the Palestinians who are still living in refugee camps, who are, and that's not only in the West Bank, of course, but in the refugee camps in Lebanon and in Jordan in particular, the two countries that have the largest number of Palestinian refugees. Hundreds of thousands, actually more than in the millions now, of Palestinian refugees when you count those who are entitled to refugee status, not only because they were expelled, but because they are descendants of those who were expelled. So there's no solution, really, to the crisis without self-determination for the Palestinians, including the right of return. And this is treated as completely anathema, of course, by, as I mentioned before, by Israeli leaders, and the U.S. By U.S. leaders as well. But there's no other solution that you can see at this point, I don't believe, than one state that had equal rights for all people. The Palestinians who live inside Israel are represented in the Knesset. They have a small representation. And last year they proposed just such a bill. It called a state with equal rights for all citizens. That was the name of the law. It wasn't even allowed to be brought for a debate in the Knesset, and that's very unusual. The Knesset usually at least has a debate and then they vote something down, but they didn't want to suffer, the Israeli side didn't want to suffer the embarrassment of voting down a law that called for equal rights for all, and instead they passed the nation-state law that said only Jewish people in Israel are entitled to self-determination. That's an exclusive right for them. So, you know, that really shows where things are going, and the idea that they can buy off part of the population, well, that's an old idea, but it doesn't resolve the issue of the right of self-determination, which is so essential to the Palestinians, and as I said, including the right of return.
Okay. Jeffrey Alderman, I'd like to cut to the chase here, and I think that you have actually done that with the way that you have described this whole thing. I don't think for the Trump administration, Donald Trump himself, or Benjamin Netanyahu, things like the right to self-determination, or the right of return, or the freedom of movement, or any of the core issues perhaps, make any difference to them maybe. It doesn't seem like it will. It seems like when you have the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo saying they didn't think Netanyahu's pre-election promise to annex the occupied West Bank to Israel would impact the so-called deal of the century, well, that shows right there that none of this core issue stuff is going to matter any longer. My question to you is, they're going to make a presentation that the Palestinians are going to rebuff. What's going to happen then? How will they move forward, and what would they do then?
Well, I think from Trump's point of view, you have to remember that he's looking for a second term in office next year, and he's looking for his legacy. And in brutal electoral terms in the USA, he is looking for the Christian Republican vote to back him, as they did in 2016. Now, you may think that that's very brutal, but I think these are the facts of life so far as Donald Trump is concerned. Of course, there isn't going to be a real negotiation because, as you've quite rightly said, the Israelis backed by Washington will not countenance a right of return, and only a limited definition of what we would call self-determination in the West Bank, that is areas A and B as defined in the Oslo agreements, not area C. Incidentally, it has to be said on the other side that all the signs from Israel are that if area C were to be annexed, every inhabitant, every adult inhabitant would be offered Israeli citizenship and an Israeli passport. I think that's important to bear in mind.
The Saudi Arabian factor here needs to be mentioned, I guess, Richard Becker, in the respect that you would think, at least many reports indicated that Saudi Arabia's young Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, were working on the so-called deal of the century. But the problem is they're not supposed to have diplomatic relationship, A and B. They need to have the Arabs on the ground. They need to be convinced of this deal. However, you're having the Saudi king now, more than before, in some sense, reaffirming support for a Palestinian state coming from King Salman, that his country permanently stands by Palestine and his people's right to an independent state. What is your reading on that stance?
Well, first of all, let me say, I don't think that the Saudi monarchy cares about the Palestinian people at all, except for public relations purposes. I also need to mention that if Area C was annexed to the State of Israel and the Palestinian inhabitants were granted Israeli citizenship, they would be being granted citizenship into a state that by basic law, the nation state law, says that they will be second-class citizens, that only the Jewish residents of Israel are entitled to self-determination. That's an exclusive right for them, meaning that for everybody else who lives there, they're denied that right. So I don't think it's much of a consolation to, or any at all, to the Palestinians that being annexed would mean they could become citizens of a state that classifies them under apartheid terms. To go back to the Saudis for a second, I think that the Crown Prince, MBS, has made it very clear that he considers, and he's made a number of statements that have been reported behind closed doors, that he really considers the Palestinian problem to just be an annoyance to them in getting on with their plans for, you know, the 2030 and the revamping and making Saudi Arabia into a superpower in the world, an economic superpower and perhaps also a military superpower. That's their real concern. They pay lip service to the Palestinian cause only.
Okay. We got 30 seconds to give to you each. Jeffrey Alderman, the announcement has not been made yet. Why, and what will Israel do before the announcement is made? Do you think he's going to go ahead with either settlements or annexations? 30 seconds.
But the announcement is not made yet because only today has Netanyahu announced that he has the Knesset majority and will form a government. I do not think that Netanyahu will go ahead with annexation without the green light from Donald Trump.
Okay, same question to you. 30 seconds, Richard Becker, please.
Yeah, I think such a move, I do agree with that, that such a move cannot be made without the okay of Washington. But I think that they're going to get the okay of Washington to at least annex the settlement blocks, as they have talked about. As Area C is 60% of the West Bank, so that may be coming too. We have to wait and see.
Very well, thank you very much for that. Let me thank our guests, historian, academic, and journalist Jeffrey Alderman, and also from the Answer Coalition, Richard Becker. Thank you both for your comments. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate.
Thank you.
From Mikhail Vitakvay, entire team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye. Until next time.